Yes, my name's Peter Dorman. I'm a surgeon in private practice, and I enjoyed your address, Mr. Abbott. Thanks very much. I've got a question about specialist training in the private sector. And I think everybody involved in the debate understands and accepts the necessity for training in the private sector to emerge and to increase. But to date, the colleges, particularly the College of Surgeons, I think have largely paid lip service to this. I was just wondering, I think the college accreditation of training positions is in effect a rate-limiting step in the desire of both the Commonwealth and the private sector to play a role in specialist training, and I was just wondering what your strategy might be to address this.
Thanks, Peter. A number of observations. First of all, I'm a little disappointed and frustrated with how slow a process it has turned out to be to get more private sector specialist training into place. And I am now whipping my officials, metaphorically at least, for doing a lot of talking but not much delivering in this area. We have seen some small provision for private sector radiology and pathology training in the former RePAT hospitals of Greenslopes and Hollywood. There is significant specialist training, but we don't have in place large-scale, widespread arrangements for registrars to move between two systems, and we don't have a mechanism for funding registrars in the private sector other than possibly through use of the MBS assistant surgeon's rebate, which is not always very satisfactory. So I think we do need to do a fair bit of work, and I would like to be able to make some specific proposals, or at least to be in a position to see specific things happening in this area within a matter of a couple of months at least. On the role of the colleges, look, you know, it's kind of like an article of faith amongst many people that the colleges are a trade union and that basically they're a job protection racket for their members. I'm not sure that that's altogether fair. Certainly, the colleges will say these days that they're not in the business of doing that because all of their members are absolutely flat out and would actually like others to help rather than to keep others out lest they steal patients from them. So I'm reluctant to leap to the conclusion that state government ministers appear to, that the colleges are the enemy in this area. My other observation is that the only way to judge the technical competence of a would-be specialist is through using the existing specialists, and that basically means the colleges. So I would much rather work with the colleges than against the colleges, and I suppose I would only want to take up arms against the colleges if I was convinced that they were acting in ways that were unreasonable, and so far, at least, in my dealings with them, that hasn't been the case.
Minister, thank you very much for your presentation. It was full of detail of the sort of issues that you've been grappling with, and we're very fortunate to have a Minister for Health who applies himself in such detail to such a wide range of complexity that's always there in health services. My question is about the negotiations of the new healthcare agreement, which you or perhaps your successor in 2008 will be
my coalition leading. Successor, perhaps, yes.
My concern is that in state after state, the management of health services through hospitals is handled on a transaction basis, on basis of budgets, of waiting lists, of numbers of patients passing through, with very little recognition that we're at a stage of major potential change in the style of delivery of health services. The last 20, 30 years has seen huge advances in biomedical research, advances in genetics with their relevance to disease and response to treatment, protein markers for selection of appropriate treatment in particular cases, huge advances in IT with the potential for far greater delivery of health services to remote locations, remote sensing, and all of that, which could change the style of delivery. And the major centres of innovation in healthcare over a long period have been the university hospitals in the United States, Britain and elsewhere. But with this preoccupation with a transaction-based health system, just based on numbers, the university hospitals are now seen as very large community hospitals, just fighting with the rest on the same basis as others. And my concern is that the whole negotiation for the future of health services at this time needs to be looking at the long-term future, challenges of aging and all the rest. Different styles of delivery of service need to be done, and that requires bringing a close interface between the huge strengths of biomedical research which we have in this country, closely interfacing with health services, and I'm not sure how that can best be driven.
Well, thanks, David. Look, you've raised some pretty big issues. I am not a devotee of any form of central planning or top-down direction, not because I don't have huge conceit as to my own insights. I mean, I do think I know intimately everything that should happen everywhere, but I don't think anyone else much does. And were I to try to direct the whole thing, even with the best advice in the world, I suspect I would often get it wrong. Now, I absolutely take your point about how all sorts of developments, from new breakthroughs in health and medical research to IT, to the changing forms of service delivery of healthcare, I mean, all of these are having a dramatic impact on how people should be treated or might be treated and how systems might evolve. But what I would like to do is not so much try to anticipate that and say what should happen where and when, but to try to get the states to be as flexible as I think the federal government has long been in its method of delivering health services. To put it in a nutshell, the federal government has never tried to directly deliver health services, at least since we got rid of the repat hospitals. Basically, we've put funding formula out, whether it be Medicare or aged care or even the healthcare agreements, and said to people, you know, you come up and deliver services in accordance with that funding formula. So the actual service is delivered by someone else. The more private that person is, often the better the service is delivered and the more efficiently it's delivered. The states, by contrast, have had these kind of socialist models of service delivery, whether it, frankly, they be coalition or Labor governments, and that seems to be a mindset which is entrenched in the states. It's not just in health, it's in public transport, public education and public hospitals. Have some director general sitting in an office who basically gives orders, which are then carried out by the giant bureaucracy. So what I'd like to do with the next healthcare agreement, if possible, and there are all sorts of constraints on me, both from my own colleagues as well as from the state governments, but if possible, I would like to see services funded rather than governments funded, because if governments have to deliver a service rather than just keep a bureaucracy going, I think they're going to be much more responsive to all those things that you talk about. So that's what I'll be trying to do to the extent that I can in negotiating the next healthcare agreements. And I do think they're very important. I mean, they're a once-in-five-year opportunity to make a substantial difference. And I would be incredibly disappointed if the next healthcare agreements basically were just a slightly modified version of the current one.
Thank you, Minister. My name's Eli Greenblatt. I'm a mischievous journalist from the Australian Financial Review. I won't ask any difficult questions, but given the Liberal Party's commitment to free and open markets, and which is to be applauded, when will the government move to break up the quite cosy and lucrative cartels operated by the Pharmacy Guild and allow supermarkets to sell drugs to the people, perhaps for cheaper rates?
Well, Eli, it's good to find a journalist in the Financial Review who actually believes in markets. I mean, Finn's the most left-wing business paper in the world. But look, we have no immediate plans to do anything other than comply with the terms of the fourth pharmacy agreement, and part of that is to keep supermarkets out of the delivery of pharmacy services. You preface your question by applauding the government's commitment to free and open markets, but you know, while we think that markets are generally speaking a good thing, we're not. Is it economic fundamentalists or market fundamentalists? That's the gospel according to St. Kevin. That, you know, John Howard's Brutopia is based on market fundamentalism. Now, you know, this is an absolute caricature, and the fact that we are perfectly prepared to maintain the existing system of distribution of pharmaceuticals by pharmacy in what is at most a managed market is a sign of the government's commitment to systems that work, not to systems that might look good to the theorists from the business schools. So we're happy with the Fourth Pharmacy Agreement. We think that under the Fourth Pharmacy Agreement, consumers and patients will continue to get the full range of pharmaceuticals at a reasonable price. We think the taxpayers will continue to pay lower costs for their pharmaceuticals in Australia than just about anywhere else in the developed world. So it's a good system. It's working well. Yes, it doesn't conform to the textbook, but because it doesn't conform to the textbook, there's no reason to change it if it's working.
You've made a number of references to funding hospitals through Medicare benefit schedule rather than block grants. I wonder if I could ask you if perhaps I hear the beginning of an election commitment there.
Well, no, you don't, Peter. You know, we will not be sitting down to engage in formal negotiations with the states this side of an election. If people ask us questions about where we're thinking of going, we'll discuss the issue. But there won't be any formal negotiations this side of an election. In the end, what emerges will be the result of an agreement. It won't simply be the result of a federal diktat anyway. So look, I've said my piece on the agreements, and I think that the only thing that we can be absolutely certain of is that if the government is re-elected, we will sit down with the states to talk about it, and we will talk about them with the overriding objective of getting better health services. Now, you know, that's our objective. At this point in time, I certainly think that there's a lot to be said for more funding through the MBS and less funding through block grants, but we won't be giving hard and fast commitments one way or another this side of an election.
Mm-hmm. Good afternoon, Minister. I represent private radiology, and in particular the Australian Diagnostic Imaging Association. We represent about 70% of private radiology in the country.
Please, give me back the Fin Review.
As bad as you possibly think. We applaud the efforts that the government's going to support a private health system. Unfortunately, as you know, the private radiology operates under a capped funding mm-hmm. arrangement, where in real terms over the last 7 years, across the board on many modalities, we've had between a 17 and 35% reduction in rebates. You know, we've seen a great increase in bulk billing of GP services, which has a direct onflow to more diagnostic testing, yet we've seen no substantial increases in rebates. We've got mandatory accreditation, which is coming on board, which as an industry we applaud, but we need to absorb those costs. We as an industry have an imprimatur where we try and bulk bill pensioners, healthcare card holders, those sorts of people. Unfortunately, the rebates no longer reflect anywhere near the true cost of providing this service. The cost of staffing, the cost of accreditation, diminishing rebates. We as an industry are starting to hemorrhage. And I would be interested to be enlightened on where you see this may go in the future.
OK, well, look, it's a very fair question that you put to me. And look, radiology is perfectly entitled, as is every other element of the health sector, to put a strong case to government as to why it is in the long-term best interests of patients and the taxpayer to do things differently. But, you know, the government is, or at least tries to be, a tough negotiator. I mean, you know, our job is not just to say to people, sure, you want more money, we give you more money. Our job is to try to balance what we need to give to service providers with what we think taxpayers can reasonably afford and what we think the service providers reasonably need if they are going to maintain a reasonable and affordable level of service delivery. And look, I think, if I may say so, that whatever changes there might be in the next radiology agreement, which is the time for you guys to come in with your case, but whatever changes there might be in the next radiology agreement, the fact is that the previous radiology agreements have been very good for everyone. They've been good for the government. They've kept a lid on taxpayers' costs. They've been good for patients. Bulk billing rates have remained very high, and out-of-pockets have remained reasonable for those people who face out-of-pockets. And I hate to say this, but certainly the publicly listed radiology providers don't seem to be in all sorts of trouble with their profits. Now, I mean, I know you could tell me that there's some kind of a crunch coming, but as an occasional looker at the financial pages, I don't see these companies in a lot of trouble and I don't see their share prices crashing. So, look, by all means, make an argument as part of the next healthcare, the next radiology agreement. But at the moment, I think that the system is going reasonably well, and I have no desire to impose unbearable stresses and strains on anyone. But remember, we are in the business of getting a good deal for patients and a good deal for taxpayers, not simply a good deal for shareholders.
Thank you, Minister. My name is Michael Dorahy. I'm from Fujitsu, Australia. My question's about the electronic health record and the projects that have been underway for some years to implement an electronic record for all Australians. I remember a year or two ago you expressed some impatience at the lack of progress, and from my point of view, I haven't seen much happen then. So I was wondering if you could share with us what your roadmap is in that area.
Okay, well, thanks, Michael. Yeah, look, I certainly have been frustrated with the slow pace of change here. In fact, the first scripted speech I gave as a health minister in, I think, November 2003 was about health IT. And I thought then, if I set myself the goal of an integrated IT-based health record for everyone within 5 years, I was pretty safe. I thought either it would be achieved or I won't be the health minister then. I might be the health minister in 5 years' time, in another year and a half, and we may not be there. But I do think some significant progress has been made. I am told that the National eHealth Transition Authority, known as NETA, is close to finalising the necessary definitional issues to establish unique identifiers for individuals and for providers and for allowing the same thing to be similarly described everywhere, therefore getting a common language effectively. I'm told we're very, very close to that. I'm also told, and if I may praise the radiology and pathology providers here, I'm also told that these providers are routinely now sending their results through IT rather than through post or fax or sending the films by courier and so on. The big problem as yet is that a lot of doctors are still doing their case notes on a bit of cardboard, particularly specialists who are incredibly sophisticated when it comes to their surgery and other things, but are often quite antiquated when it comes to the way they do their admin. So we've got to get the doctors to have IT-compatible case notes, and then we've got to have an arrangement whereby these things are all copied or at least put into a repository, whether it be a central repository or an individual repository, and accessible with appropriate security and appropriately sorted and indexed to people who are authorised to use them. Now, I think that things aren't quite as gloomy now as they were. I think that the building blocks of progress are starting to fall into place, even if there still isn't all that much which is evident to the consumer at this stage. Certainly, for me, one of the best health IT developments will be the ability of patients to claim their Medicare rebate from their treating doctor's surgery through a swipe of the card. And I'm told by Human Services Department, Medicare Australia, that this will become possible from July, which is not far off.